You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
You're listening to Right Side Radio. This is Brian Taylor. I'm in the studio today filling in for Phil Williams. Phil is out of town. He's going to see his son pin on the major rank in the Army, and that's important. So he's glad to see him going to do that with his son. He and his wife, Charlene, and Phil invited me to guest host today. I've done this before and didn't think he'd ever invite me back, Boomer, but here I am.
Hey, we're happy to have you.
Well, I appreciate it. We'll see how this goes.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great day.
Listen, it's been a great week, hasn't it? It's been a busy news week.
Busy news week. I mean, talking about all the elections happening and then Trump, announcing.
Yeah, we had Trump's announcement this week. Of course, Pelosi has decided to ride into the sunset, which is great news for a lot of conservatives. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Elon Musk is draining the swamp effectively at Twitter, and some fascinating things happening there this week. In fact, he just announced on Twitter a moment ago something he's going to be doing every Friday. He's calling them Freedom Fridays, and apparently he's going to be releasing banned Twitter accounts every Friday. So that seems to be the speculation anyway. Sometimes he sends out these cryptic tweets, and we don't really know what he means by them, but that's what everybody thinks he means when he sent out his tweet that said Freedom Fridays with a spoiler alert. So we'll find out soon enough what else he's got up his sleeves over at Twitter. That's a fascinating story, what's happening there this week, and it really speaks loudly to what's going on in our culture more broadly. If you're paying attention to this story at all, you know that Elon Musk bought Twitter. It's now privately owned. It's not traded on the stock market anymore. So he gets to call all the shots. And he released a memo internally. I have the memo in my hand right here. He released it internally to his employees, many of whom are not big Elon Musk fans and very few of whom you would call conservatives. So it was controversial when he took over Twitter. So he sends out a memo, Boomer, and it says, I'm just going to read this. It's a short email he sent out to his employees from Elon Musk to the team at Twitter, subject, a fork in the road. And here's what he said. This was on November 16th. What was that, Wednesday?
Yeah.
Wednesday.
So yeah, Wednesday.
He said, going forward, to build a breakthrough Twitter 2.0, and succeed in an increasingly competitive world, we will need to be extremely hardcore. This will mean working long hours at high intensity. Only exceptional performance will constitute a passing grade. Twitter will also be much more engineering-driven. Design and product management will still be very important and report to me, but those writing great code will constitute the majority of our team, and they will have the greatest sway. At its heart, Twitter is a software and servers company. So I think this makes sense, Elon says. And he closes out with this. He says, if you are sure that you want to be part of the new Twitter, please click yes on the link below. Anyone who has not done so by 5 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, that was Thursday, yesterday, will receive 3 months of severance. Whatever decision you make, thank you for your efforts to make Twitter successful. Now, if you're like me, that doesn't sound like a very controversial letter from a CEO, right? I mean, there was a day and time when it was the norm. Actually, it was minimum requirement of being employed somewhere to be a loyal employee, to embrace the vision of the CEO of your boss, and to show up for work. But man, if you've been following this, this is just. There was a firestorm last night. Mainstream media has seized on his use of the word hardcore, and all of the news articles are suggesting that somehow there's conspiracy to, I don't know, it's like slave labor or something going on at Twitter is how they want to make it out. Here's the way CNN said, Elon Musk gives ultimatum to Twitter employees, do extremely hardcore work or get out. Of course, that's the headline right here. Look at that. That's not at all what he said. He said, we're going to build a breakthrough Twitter 2.0. We've got an increasingly competitive world. We're going to need to be extremely hardcore. Of course, hardcore in this sense, everybody knows hardcore means you got to give your best effort. We're going to work hard. So very, really kind of language that you might expect from a new leader at a company. But because he is such a lightning rod and because he's perceived to be a conservative, although we don't really know what his political philosophy is, he's more of a... he has been clear that he is a champion of free speech, and that's one of the reasons why he wanted to buy Twitter. But now you have a group of just it's wokeism, it's wokeness that is just gone rampant. Boomer, we at my law firm last month we were interviewing candidates for an associateship, mm-hmm. and I'm not kidding you. This one guy comes in and he talked a little bit about his background, and then I asked that question that you should always be prepared for an interview. I said, "What are your strengths? What is it that makes you the ideal candidate for this position?" Right, pretty right. Basic question.
Yeah, basic question.
He paused and he looked at me and he said, "Well, I can tell you this: I'll show up for work every single day." And my jaw literally hit the floor. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. There's something about Generation Z. Maybe it started with millennials. It's probably, it's been fomented on the internet and the idea that, gosh, I want to be a social media influencer. I've got young kids. You've got young kids. They're mm-hmm. they're coming up now in an economy where the idea of a work ethic is antiquated.
Oh, right.
And that's what Musk is running to at Twitter now. You've got all these people who for years now have been working remotely from home, supposedly. They haven't been required to go into the office. They actually, one other thing Elon did this week, he canceled the free lunches at the Twitter headquarters. So literally, you no longer get a free lunch at Twitter.
Oh.
So the employees are upset, and mainstream media is saying that Elon Musk has caused a massive exodus of the company, and suggesting that the suggestion last night, I mean, Twitter was ablaze. There were four or five search terms that were trending, and they all had to do with Twitter, with predictions about Twitter going south,
wow.
Folding, closing. Uh-huh. And it was funny because Elon sends out a tweet after about an hour or two of this. He sends out a tweet. He says, "We've had the highest engagement ever that we've had on Twitter in the history of the company." So,
because everybody's following what they're doing.
people are predicting the end of Twitter on Twitter. And so anyway, but here's what's really going on. I think that this is fascinating. I read this email from Elon, and I thought, what's he really doing here? Here's a new CEO who's coming to company. He didn't lay everybody off. He told everybody, "We're going to build something great. We're going to make Twitter great again." And he said, "I need your help to do that. But I need people who are champions for doing this, who are hard workers, who are going to come to work, who are going to do the job, put in the hours, and give it their best effort." And that was controversial because he was asking people to work hard. So that's where we are in this culture, and I'm going to talk to. We've got some great guests coming on today. Congressman Gary Palmer will be calling in just a little bit. He's going to talk with us about his being reelected to the chairmanship of the House Republican Policy Committee. Gary's got a long record and a solid record in social policy, and so we'll talk to him a little bit about what's happening in our culture. After Congressman Palmer, we'll have. Former State Representative Paul DeMarco, who is the chair of the Jefferson County GOP. That's the Birmingham area GOP. And then we're going to finish off the day today with Secretary of State-elect Wes Allen, been a friend of mine for a long time. Secretary of State-elect Allen will be here to talk about election integrity and the changes that will be coming to his office to oversee our elections and make sure we're doing things the right way. So we've got a great lineup today. I'm glad to be here, glad to be guest hosting, and look forward to taking calls when we come back. You're listening to Right Side Radio, Solid Conservative, and just plain right. I'm Brian Taylor, filling in for Phil Williams. We'll see you back here in just a minute. Hey, you're listening to Right Side Radio, Solid Conservative, and Just Plain Right. This is Brian Taylor filling in for Phil Williams today. We've got a big news week going on. Lots of things happening. Even today, Friday is usually a slow news day, but there's a lot of things happening today. I see, Boomer, we've already got a caller waiting to talk about something that's just happened out of DOJ, so we'll get to that in a minute. But let me get first to Brian from Huntsville, wants to follow up on this Twitter employee mess. Brian, how are you doing today?
Mighty fine. I hope you are, too.
I am. What you got?
Well, the termination package for Twitter and everything, as far as what they have going on, how many of those people that accepted, I think that was 3 months, you said, how many of those, depending on the state, can actually pile on and add unemployment on that? And that would tell you which people actually bailed.
That's a great question. You know, and what's also gotten lost in the media here on this story is he didn't really fire anybody. I mean, he's not cleaning. This was actually brilliant the way that he did this. If he had fired them, you're exactly right. If he had fired them, they would have been entitled to unemployment. But he didn't fire anybody. He sent out an email that said, "Hey, listen. If you're on board with me making Twitter great and you're going to work hard and come into the office and do the job that needs to be done, click this box here. Otherwise, you're welcome to leave and I'll give you 3 months severance." He promised these people 3 months pay not to work. So, you know, maybe that's a form of unemployment, but, you know, Twitter's going to be paying it. I don't know if they've got contracts or if that was just a generous offer on his part. But you make a great point. I mean, you know.
Well, the military members get 1 month per year, which is pretty generous, that time off. So they can sit there and get their resume set up for Facebook.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The way Facebook is going nowadays, there might not be a job waiting there for them.
True enough. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, Brian. Appreciate it. Yeah, Brian makes a great point. You know, I was going to say before the break, Boomer, that this email is just absolutely ingenious, and it's a testament to Elon's leadership style. I mean, you don't associate Elon. It's something that we as conservatives mm-hmm. could learn from. You don't associate Elon with anger. He doesn't have that righteous anger or that resentful anger. In fact, he mocks those who make fun of it. Just he lets it roll off his back, and he'll send out a tweet that kind of mocks them. And look, he's an interesting character. He's a little weird, but I mean, the guy's figured out how to start his own car company that's disrupted the auto industry, and now he's about to send humans. Well, he's already sent humans into space, but he's about to send humans to Mars here one day. So it's kind of hard to pick on a guy like that, mm-hmm. criticize a guy like that. But this email was an example of just really, I don't know how long he thought about how to do this. But sending out an email that doesn't fire anybody, but that gives the employees an opportunity to decide whether they want to continue to work for Twitter or resign. I haven't seen anybody talking about that, but Brian from Huntsville there makes a great point.
Right.
So let's see. Who else we got? We got on the phone Sparky from Harvest, Alabama. Sparky, how you doing today?
Hey, good. Great show, you and Boomer. And I agree with everything you said about Elon Musk. Very wicked smart guy, and he shows it in everything he does. I walked by the break room TV this afternoon, and I had to laugh. Of course, with the Republican-dominated House coming up and all the other shoes beginning to drop on Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and all their corruption and their crooked deals overseas about to happen, after spending a few days protesting about political investigations and yada yada. Now the head of the Department of Justice had a press conference appointing a special prosecutor just to remind everybody that they're still going after Trump for the biggest nothing burger of all their investigations, the classified documents that they raided from his house. I had to laugh out loud. I thought, oh, my gosh, how reactionary, how pathetic, and how overtly political in and of itself. I just found it funny.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. This comes right on the heels of the GOP press conference the other day announcing the intent of the new House majority to engage in an investigation regarding Hunter Biden. But you know, it's not Hunter Biden. They said very clearly that that it's going to lead directly to the president, and they said they've got the evidence. I think they handed out some evidence to the media that day. So. You know, now you've got even the New York Times saying where there's smoke, there's fire. And speaking of Elon, he just tweeted out, he retweeted, this happened like an hour ago, he retweeted a Babylon Bee article. And the Babylon Bee headline, if you're familiar with the Babylon Bee, it's a very funny parody news site. But they had a headline that said... If only there a way to have gotten word out about the Hunter Biden laptop before the campaign, and the article made the point obviously that there was plenty of opportunity for that news to get out before the campaign, but it was suppressed by those on the left and their friends in the mainstream media. So now it looks like we've got this full blown investigation coming. That the Republicans have just flat out said is going to involve the president very directly. We're going to talk about a little bit about that maybe the next hour. We may talk about it with Congressman Palmer when he calls in just a little bit. But you're right. The announcement today that DOJ is appointing a special counsel, Attorney General Garland's going to appoint a special counsel to continue the investigation into Donald Trump. We're looking, it's going to be a long 2 years, folks. It's going to be a long 2 years now that we've got Republicans in the House, Democrats with a very thin majority in the Senate, and of course, still holding the White House. It's going to be a very political and a very polarized 2 years. So we'll just have to see.
I'll make a prediction.
What's your prediction?
If the Republicans in the House demonstrate strength, and lay out the argument and the evidence for all of Joe Biden and Hunter Biden's international corruption and wheeling and dealing and, you know, pay for play, pay for access. If the media covers it and the DOJ does anything with it, it means that the Democrat Party is all too happy to let that be the excuse to go ahead and retire Joe Biden and get him out of the picture, because it'll only mean that they're willing to admit that he is feeble-minded, that he is suffering from dementia, and they're ready to move on. That's the only way we're ever going to see this.
Well, and I think that's a great point. I think we're already starting to see some signs that the party, the Democratic Party, is going to be putting a lot of pressure on the president to step aside and let somebody else run in 2024. So thank you for calling in, Sparky. Appreciate it. You're listening to Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We're on the Crawford Media Station in Birmingham, WXJC 101.1 FM, WYDE 850 AM. And in Huntsville, you're here listening to us on the Cumulus Broadcasting, 92.5 FM, 770 AM. I'm Brian Taylor. We'll be right back after this. All right, you're listening to Right Side Radio. I'm Brian Taylor, filling in for Phil Williams today. And I have a good friend on the phone and somebody who's been a mentor to me. Congressman Gary Palmer has joined us on the phone. Congressman Palmer was first elected to Congress he represents the 6th District in 2014. He quickly became a thought leader among his class and among the Republican Congress, the Republican caucus in general. And I just have known Congressman Palmer for a long time. So, Congressman, I want to thank you for calling in today, and we're excited to talk to you. It's been a busy news week, and we got a lot to talk about.
Well, good talk with you, Brian. I hope you're doing well.
I am. Well, I want to jump right into your role. And a lot of people might not understand exactly what this means, but you've been recently reelected as the chairman of the House Republican Policy Committee. So what exactly is that, and what does it mean for conservatives? What does it mean for the state of Alabama that you're going to be serving in that position again?
Well, I'm one of the leadership in the House. I was ranking fourth or fifth, depending on who you talk to. But when Kevin McCarthy becomes Speaker, Steve Scalise becomes Majority Leader, I will get demoted down to fifth or sixth, and I am extremely happy about that because that means we're in the majority. And as far as what we do, we're there to help educate our members on policy, to provide background information on key issues. We put together a guide to the issues, much like we did for the state legislature when you were there.
Yeah.
And they can get that on our website. We also publish shorter papers, briefs, and then we do an economic digest that we get out to the member staff. And when I took over as chairman of the policy committee, we have a thing in Congress called listserv, and you can't just subscribe people to it. People have to actually proactively subscribe to it. So when I took over, we had zero. Now we have over 1,000 congressional staff and 500 outside organizations. So we're having a huge outreach. We also do little video blogs with members to spotlight key legislative initiatives when they've got a bill that we need to get information out. We go in the studio and do that with the members. And we do these little profiles called This Is Who I Am, because I have them come in out of the coat and tie or dress suit or dress pants, whatever, and if it's our women members, and just talk about who they are, how they grew up, their family life, what they did, the struggles they overcame. But like I said, because people don't see us as people, they just see us as a bunch of suits. And so we started letting members tell their life stories, which I think is going to be very significant and helping them connect with people.
That's great. And so do the members rely on your staff at the policy committee to supply them with, look, politics has become such a cult of personality now. And so much is based, it seems like at least, on how you come across in social media, how you come across in a 15-second soundbite. But the policy is still very important when it comes time to really explain your position on these bills. Do the members rely on the committee for helping navigate those deeper policy issues and explain them to their constituents?
They do. I've had a number of members come to me and tell me how much they've appreciated the guided issues and the stuff that we put out, because the policy does matter. And you made a good point. You didn't kind of went on past it about the Twitter world and all this stuff that a lot of people in Congress do. And one of my big concerns about what's happening in Congress is that it's almost becoming a reality show, and,
yeah,
and there are
absolutely
members that think they're celebrities. And I've literally had to tell some of them that they're not celebrities. They're members of Congress, and they're not there to gain fame. They're there to do a job. And I sort of separate people who run for Congress in two groups, those who want the title and those who want the job. And the ones that I can really connect with and work with are those who want the job. And it's a job. You know that from having been in the state Senate.
It is. If you do it right. And you guys, you were president of the Alabama Policy Institute for over 20 years, right?
Almost 25.
Yeah. So policy is your bailiwick. It's your background, And I remember when I served in the Senate with Phil in the state Senate, relying heavily on the information that the Policy Institute would put out. Very, very helpful and very factual. It was always well-researched. And so yeah, I would encourage any listeners, I don't know how to get on this listserv. If I can get on the listserv, please let me know. Or if our listeners can, I guess we can go to the website of the Republican Policy Committee and that will give us the factual, the policy-based arguments for the positions that we believe in.
Yeah, you can see that. I'm not sure the Economic Digest is up, but that's one of my favorite things. And another thing we do, and again, you know how much information comes across your desk as a member of the legislature. It's the same. It's even more so with Congress. So we put up these little plastic dispensaries off the floor when we're there voting, and we put little pocket cards in.
Yeah.
That hit, just give them the bullet points, but on the back of the card is a QR code so they can use their phone. They can read the whole brief, and everything is cited. Because we know everything we say will get fact-checked by the left-wing media. So we've already done that. Whatever, if anyone in our among the Republicans use our data, then they're confident that whatever they say is right.
Yeah.
And it's worked well. If people are interested in going to our website, it's republican.house. I'm sorry, it's republicanpolicy.house.gov. republicanpolicy.house.gov.
Well, great. If anybody who's out there who needs some talking points for Thanksgiving dinner with your family who may not share your conservative values, that's the place to go. I know there's lots of facts and data and detail there that you can get to buttress your own arguments and really explain your conservative philosophy, why you're a conservative and why we believe what we believe. And what the record is, frankly. So,
we're gonna do some more. In the minority, my budget was rather limited because the speaker in that case, the last 4 years, been Pelosi, and you're limited in office space, you're limited in the number of people you can have, and what you can have in your budget. So we were really squeezing nickels, but I talked with McCarthy yesterday about this, and we want to really make this the Republican policy think tank in-house.
Right.
And we're going to do some papers that are looking at a number of things that a lot of people may not be fully aware of. I know a lot of people concerned about China buying farmland in the United States. Well, it's not just China. Saudi Arabia has bought land in Arizona and are draining the aquifers because they're raising alfalfa, and everything they harvest they send to Saudi Arabia.
Mm.
And it's really putting the Arizona farmers and ranchers in a bad spot. So we're going to start doing some of these bigger reports that we can provide to our members. We did it. We did one, and it was our trip down to the border, and we had multiple Republicans going down with different groups. And I just had them compile all of this information, and we put together a report, and McCarthy and I sent it to Vice President Harris because apparently she hasn't been able to find her way to the southern border, and we wanted to let her know what was really happening.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know. What other roles? Let's look more broadly at the Alabama delegation now. Now that the House GOP, now that the GOP has taken the House, What does that mean for the state in terms of our congressional delegation and the influence that we're going to have?
Well, we've lost a lot of influence. I mean, when I got elected, it never occurred to me that we wouldn't have Sessions and Shelby in the Senate. And Shelby was the top Republican on the Senate Appropriations Committee.
Yep.
And I think had Sessions stayed in the Senate, he would have chaired the Budget Committee. And then in the House, we've lost Martha Roby, who was on the Appropriations Committee, and Bradley Byrne, who was on the Rules Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I waked up November 8th or November 9th realizing that Robert Adderholt, Mike Rogers, and I are the senior members of the delegation. I can't believe it. But what we do have in that is Adderholt, I think, will one day be chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. and we're looking, hopefully he's going to chair a subcommittee on appropriations. So we have him on appropriations. Mike Rogers is going to be the next chairman of the House Armed Services Committee.
Right.
And as you know, with your military background as a former JAG officer, how important that is to Alabama in regard to the military. And then, like I say, I'll rank fifth or sixth in leadership, and it's really a big deal to have the three of us in the positions we're in. Plus, Mike and I are both on the steering committee, which is extremely important because that's the committee that determines who will get on a committee and who will chair a committee.
Right.
And for only having six Republicans in the House, for two of us to be on steering is a big deal. And, of course, we got Jerry Carl and Barry Moore. They're both freshman members, and we believe that Jerry will move up to appropriations, so we'll have two appropriators. And we're hoping to get Dale Strong on Armed Services since he's out of Huntsville. And Mo was on Armed Services. We would like to get him on there. And I think he'll want – there's another committee or two that I don't want to discuss that I think could be significant for Alabama that might be a little more of a lift, but we're going to – Mike and I are going to try to grease the skids for him.
Not going to do Barry's it on the show today anyway. So.
No, it won't help on the show. It might hurt. But Barry is on ag, and that is a huge deal for Alabama as well.
Well, that's good to know. And I tell you what, we're going to take a break here, and I appreciate you hanging on through the break. We'll come back and talk about some more issues going on up in Washington and get your take on it. Thanks for being with us. We'll be right back with Congressman Gary Palmer. You're listening to Right Side Radio with Brian Taylor filling in for Phil Williams, where you can hear... where we are solid conservative and just plain right. The right side. You're listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. This is Brian Taylor standing in for Phil Williams. We're on with Congressman Gary Palmer. You still there, Congressman?
I'm here.
Great. Well, we appreciate you hanging on through the break. And by the way, Senator Williams wanted to let me know that he wanted to have you on, but that I beat him to you. So appreciate you coming on. But he did want to thank you personally for being on the show today. So
you tell Phil I appreciate him, and I'll be happy to come on anytime he wants me to.
Well, thank you. I'll let him know that. So I want to ask you, we've got a few minutes left. I want to ask you specifically about what your view is for the first 100 days of the Republican majority in the House. What are the priorities going to be?
Well, Kevin McCarthy's made it a priority to defund the 87,000 IRS agents, and I think that's the right thing to do because it's going to, I think, settle some nerves. The Democrats are going to be talking about this. They're going to say about a $600 billion tax gap. And what the tax gap represents is that's the amount of money that should have been collected but was never collected.
Yeah.
And I had this discussion during the Obama administration with the commissioner of the IRS, a guy named John Koskinen. And with the deputy commissioner and with the comptroller general. And I asked, you know, is this fraud? I mean, are people defrauding the government? And they said, no, look, some of it is, but the vast majority is the complexity of the tax code. And Koskinen literally testified in another hearing that more auditing is not the solution. And I can't believe I'm saying it, but I agree with Koskinen.
And that was under the Obama administration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That it would be so disruptive in the economy, so punitive to small business and individuals, that he said that audits is not the way to do it. And they admit it'd be a fraction of the gap that would be collected through audits. So what I'm going to propose is that if the problem is complexity, the solution's not audits, it's a simpler tax code. So I think whoever's our next chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, that will be a high priority. But one of our main focuses, I'll just give you our, we've got to do all that we can to bring down the cost of living, which we can, because we can reduce the amount of money in the money supply by cutting some spending. And it's not going to be Social Security and Medicare like the Democrats went out and lied about. We've got to increase energy production and make sure that more of that stays in the United States rather than gets exported overseas. And that'll bring down inflation because energy is the most inflationary part of the entire economy. But the third thing is we've got to roll back some of these regulations that have been imposed by the Biden administration. He imposed over $200 billion in additional regulatory costs in his first year in office, Brian. That's three times what Obama did his first year.
It's
and that's a hidden tax on everybody.
It drives up the cost on corporations, companies that provide services and products to us. That drives up their cost to comply with regulations, and they pass that on to us, right?
Yeah, it's inflationary. I was on NewsHour with, I forget her name now, but and explained this because she was raised a question about what can Republicans do? Is that the job of the Federal Reserve? And the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates and put us into a recession.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that's not where we're heading, but they need to do their job. But I think there's a lot that we can do, and those are going to be our priorities, that secure the border. And that's got, and what people need to understand is we have a very slim majority in the House. At best, and I pray to God that Herschel wins over in Georgia, it'll be 50-50 in Georgia, and then they'll still have the White House. But we have to push these policies out and force the Democrats to act on it. And even if they don't pass it in the Senate or it gets vetoed in the White House, we have to do this.
Well, I think you make a great point. We're still going to be in a disadvantaged position with President Biden's veto pen, and it'd be very difficult to override the president without control in the Senate. But you all will be in a position to highlight the issues, especially going into the 2024 elections, to really highlight those things that Democrats have kind of been able to obscure from the public. And so I know that's going to be an important role for you. Speaking of it, obviously there was a press conference this week about an investigation into Hunter Biden and Congress's role, oversight role for the administration. Where do you see that going?
I think the American public are going to be shocked, and particularly the part of the American public that watches the left-wing media, at just how compromised this president is. Biden, in my opinion, is the most compromised president in the history of the United States.
Oh, it's scary.
And it's predominantly because of Hunter Biden, but also because of what we may find out was his very deep involvement in what Hunter was doing.
That was the most shocking thing to me about the press conference was they didn't pull any punches. I mean, they just flat out said this is going to implicate the president all the way to the top.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be shocking. But here again, we've been training our members on how to do investigative oversight, investigative hearings. And you're a JAG officer. You understand how important it is to properly set up a question or a series of questions. You create a theme and you set up these questions, but you got to know how to execute the question and how to follow up.
Yeah, and it's
going to be extremely important. We're going to do that. But what people need to understand is whatever we find, we'll refer the evidence to the Department of Justice, and I doubt seriously Merrick Garland will lift a finger.
Well, I think we can count on your colleagues in the Republicans in the House to certainly be more transparent and direct with the people of this country about what's going on and how they're running that investigation. So I'm pleased to see that. Thank you again for joining us. I wish we had another hour to talk. I know you're full of information, so I'm sure you'll have an opportunity to be back on here with Phil very soon. Thank you very much, Congressman.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, you're listening to Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Hey, all you right side ruffians out there.